Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the very first edition of the WWE Podcast of 2020, the very first show of the new decade. Welcome, guys. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to give us a listen. And I expect really big things for this show coming in the next 12 months. You guys have made this show grow crazily, and I want to thank you for that. As I always do every show, I make sure to make that a point, because I don't think that oftentimes we really understand what makes success happen, and that's you guys. And, you know, a lot of shows don't give the gratitude I think that's due, and I want to make sure that I do when I can, and I want to make that an opportunity and make that a thing every single show. So thank you guys for being able to make this show a success. And I told you, and I've said it before, we're just getting started. I really, really do believe that. So thank you guys. Big things coming in 2020. And beyond. So anyway, I hope everyone had a great New Year's, safe New Year's, and that your hangover is gone by now. Mine is just about gone. I had a wedding to go to last night that went until 1 o'clock in the morning, and with some friends that I never get to see, and we're rarely together. And the fact that we were all together at once is really an impossibility, right? Because some people don't even live in the state. People have lives, people have kids, people have jobs, girlfriends, wives. I mean, it's difficult. So to get all the entire crew together is really a cool deal. And of course, you know, once you get us all together and have some drinks and celebrating and partying, it's just, it's awesome. So anyway, I hope that your evening was quiet, if that's what you wanted. I hope it was crazy, if that's what you wanted. Or maybe somewhere in between, and you got to watch the ball drop, or maybe you didn't get to watch the ball drop. Maybe you just said, to hell with it, I'll wake up in the next year, and you woke up feeling refreshed, and I hope that you did. I hope that everybody, again, is feeling better than they probably did this morning, for those of us that went out and made it a long evening and paid over what we probably should have for our Uber and Lyft rides. Man, and I was an Uber and Lyft driver for a while. Haven't done it in a while, but when you're on the other end of it and you have to pay like three times the price because the demand is through the roof at like 12:45 in the morning, it's a little bit of an eye-opening experience. But when you're a driver, you love that stuff. You love it. You live for it. You love those inflated rates. But anyway, I'm on the other side of it now. And again, welcome to 2020. Welcome to the very first show of 2020. Big things coming. First and foremost, right off the bat here for this week, tomorrow obviously will be a AEW NXT review that comes on Thursday, sometimes into early Friday morning. Those shows will be up, as well as a very special wrestling nostalgia show tomorrow. And what that's going to consist of is, instead of one singular event that I look back at, in the spirit of the new decade, we are going to take a look at the last 10 years in WWE and review some of the big things going on or went on rather, and some of the highlights, lowlights, and all the moments that maybe you forgot about or like to relive. And I'm not going to be able to obviously touch on everything. I don't want it to be an 8-hour show, but I do want to make sure that I hit some of the big ticket items. Of course, string in some audio there for you guys. That's one of my favorite parts, is to listen to something live. And so that'll be there as well. But I'm going to be doing a decade in review tomorrow night, and it'll be released tomorrow night. So really, you guys have three more shows in addition to this one that'll be dropping in the next 2 days. So that's pretty cool. We're trying to get back on track here with the holidays officially over. And yes, we have Martin Luther King Day coming up, which is nothing more, let's be honest, It's nothing more than a day you go, ooh, I have the day off. If you're a state worker, if you work for the government, and that's a day that you look forward to. So I will have that day off. But outside of that, the big ticket holidays are over, and we now move into 2020. And I'm here in upstate New York. We have to get through the damn weather, which is going to be like this for the next 3.5 months when it's just, it's kind of cold. Although the snow's backed off and winter's backed off, it is not done. We have a long, long way to go. So that'll be a really, you know, great thing in about a month, 2 months, and we're still buried in snow and it's 10 degrees out and you're scraping off your car. And anyway, for us living in the north and, you know, to some extent, some of the southern states, that is what we have to do, just on a weekly basis up here. So anyway, we're here to talk about WWE Raw. We're here to talk about some of the things going on. And before we get to Raw, don't forget, Brock Lesnar returns next Monday night. And that means that it's a new year. And I've always said that I look forward to the first Monday Night Raw of the new year, because that to me is the season premiere of wrestling, of WWE's new road to WrestleMania. That's when things really start to heat up, and you see it every year where you have big returns happen on the first Raw after the new year, and this year is no different. With Brock Lesnar returning after about a month and a half hiatus, it feels like he will be back to likely address who his next opponent is, or we get some ideas of who that could be. But with the Royal Rumble looming, I mean, I don't know how much they're going to give away, given that the Rumble winner will probably face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, unless that winner is Roman Reigns, in which he will be facing The Fiend, because I don't think we want Brock Lesnar again facing Roman Reigns. But that's a whole other conversation. My point is, this is the Raw that there's not a lot of competition in terms of television, and especially with football now going into the playoffs. There's no more Monday Night Football. It's all on the weekend. So the ratings should be higher this week. Should be is the key word, with much less competition on the airwaves. One more thing about the shows this week. As I remember, I will be also having a week in review with Ashley on Saturday. So we still have a lot of shows to go. 4 more shows for you guys this week before this week closes out. And then back to the normal schedule next week. So just a little bit of a side note while I remember. So look forward for that to this coming Monday, where Brock returns, likely all hands on deck, and it's just full steam ahead to the Royal Rumble, which is, after this weekend, will be 3 weeks away. It's 3 weeks from Sunday is the Royal Rumble. So unbelievably, we are halfway to the Royal Rumble. And the reason I say halfway, I remember coming off TLC saying, oh my God, we have 6 weeks until the Rumble, and phew, just like that, it is now split in half. We have 3 weeks until the Royal Rumble, the 2020 Royal Rumble, which I'm looking forward to in a big way, because this is, to me, it's an exciting time. The Rumble match is one of my favorite matches of the year, as many, I think, would agree. And you just never know who's going to come in, debut, called up. And yeah, I still say called up. And the reason, for, you know, but people say, oh, NXT is a legitimate third brand, and they are. They are. They've achieved that in 2020, or really in 2019, now 2020. But the fact of the matter is, Raw and SmackDown are still the flagship shows of WWE, right? And you could say, well, NXT is a better show. That's fine. That's still an objective opinion. And, to some degree, I would agree with you. But we're looking at numbers and viewership. SmackDown and Raw still demolish NXT when it comes to numbers. So that's the measure and the metric that I'm looking at when I say that Raw and SmackDown are the shows that you can be called up to, right? So, and again, maybe NXT will one day overtake the ratings of, and maybe match Raw and SmackDown, but I don't think that's going to happen for a number of maybe 4 or 5 years down the line. They are on USA, so they have a very good platform to do that. But I'm looking forward to it. This is a hell of a time to be a wrestling fan. There's really no better time, with WrestleMania around the corner, AEW back on the air, and we get to hear about Jon Moxley's decision of whether or not he's going to join the Inner Circle with Chris Jericho. Very, very interesting when it comes to that, how he's going to respond. So again, I'm not following AEW too closely, which is why I have a host that does this on this show, because I just simply do not have the time, and I think that Zach does a great job. I just don't have the time, and but I do know vaguely what is happening in AEW, and I did see some of that in terms of that particular storyline with Chris Jericho extending an olive branch and offering Moxley to join the Inner Circle. So we will see. We will see about that. Alrighty, well, let's get into Monday Night Raw and some of the big ticket items here. I don't want to go in chronological order. I will to some degree, but I want to just get the big items out of the way. And the first one has to be Lashley and Lana's wedding. Now, excuse me. I think some of the people out there love this kind of stuff, and I think that this is one of those segments. Just as the entire storyline has been. Whether you like this kind of thing in wrestling or not, if this is your cup of tea, you're in your glory. And this is right up your alley. You are craving more. You love, quote, trash TV. If it's not, this is eye-rolling, sophomoric, just garbage TV that is the reason why your friends don't watch wrestling and they will roll their eyes at this kind of stuff. And to be honest, I'm hearing a lot of positive feedback for this segment. I unbelievably, and on major podcasts that are staples in the wrestling news industry, and I'm not going to name them, but we all know who they are. And they're a great show. I'm not going to trash them. They're great. They're very successful. But They had praise for the show. One of the co-hosts on that show was praising this segment. Why? Right? And I guess this is coming from the perspective of the person that doesn't enjoy this over-the-top, overproduced, too long of a segment, sports entertainment-y garbage. And the ratings may disagree with me, which is fine. Doesn't mean that I'm wrong. I'm entitled to my opinion, as everyone is. But I'm making my case as to why this is not good for wrestling in terms of its longevity and its perception among the casual fan. If you're trying to bring in new fans. And again, I am coming from the lens of this isn't my favorite kind of stuff. I don't mind sprinkles of it. But when it goes on and on and on and it's poorly acted, and it's stumbling lines, and it's nonsensical, like complete fallacy of a logic. I can't watch. Again, I will say this: Vince McMahon has done much worse. This is not bad in the sense of trying to create dramatic television. It's bad in execution by Lana. I'm sorry, Lana has been piss poor in this, and I don't know how people are praising Lana for this. I am not of the belief that she has done a good job with this. And people may say, "Oh, she's the one keeping it together." No, she's actually the one tearing this apart. And she's a pretty woman. She's great to look at. That's wonderful. That's great. I don't need another blonde on my TV that Vince McMahon likes to parade around. And now, of course, we have another one in Liv Morgan. And don't worry, we'll get there. But I'm not feeling Lana's performances. She stumbles. She is just doesn't make sense at times. Just her inflection in her promos, it's not my favorite. It's not believable. She's overacting for the sake of overacting. At least that's how I'm perceiving how she's presenting her promos. She's not, again, it's weird because while I am not a fan of this type of the wrestling world, I am still watching. Number one, because it's my job. I have this podcast to do. But also because a part of me, a guilty part of me, wants to just see how it plays out. And that's what makes this a very contrasting storyline in my brain. I really despise this kind of wrestling and Vince McMahon's justification for doing this kind of thing. At the same time, I watch it as a, like almost like a guilty pleasure of just seeing, okay, well, how terrible can this be? I almost want to see the train wreck. That's what I feel like I'm going to watch. That's what I feel is what I'm about to watch is a train wreck, and I just can't look away. It's kind of a strange thing in my brain, and maybe some of you guys out there feel the same way. While I despise it, I just can't help but watch it, which ultimately is all WWE cares about. They don't really care about your opinion of it as long as people are watching, because it's about the numbers. They're a business. So this segment, again, Lana fumbled through. She handled the what chance, I guess, pretty well. She got Bobby Lashley's makeup on her face, which Lashley tried to subtly tell her on live TV about. Was distracting and funny at times. Even Jerry Lawler was cracking jokes about it. And you had both Lashley and Lana's lovers come out, previous husbands and wives, come out and say, don't marry this man, don't marry this woman, you know, and just coming out and just saying that they did this to me, they'll do this to you. And I don't know. I mean, I guess I was expecting to just get to Rusev, right? Let's just get to Rusev because we know he's going to interrupt. I don't know. It was weird. The officiant, or the priest, I guess he was just an officiant, was also not great at times. He was overacting. And then you have Lashley, or I'm sorry, you have Rusev pop out of the cake like a stripper, right, at a bachelor party. And he was, I don't know, there was almost no crowd reaction for him. And if he says so, you know, he's been saying for weeks that he's over this, he's glad for them, she's out of his life. And yet he also stops the ceremony. Somebody explain that to me. Somebody explain how Rusev has said that he's over this and that he's ready to move on and that he's glad Bobby has Lana, they deserve each other, and that he's happy Lana is out of his life and he signed the divorce papers and this is the best day ever. And yet he also decides to interrupt the ceremony before they can actually get married, which is the key here to this whole argument about, not, you know, again, logic, a lack of logic of Rusev basically interrupting before they could actually be officially man and wife, and also him saying that, I don't care, these guys are out of my life. So there's that. I mean, the suspension of disbelief while watching these segments are just off the charts. I have to really just remove my brain surgically from my head, place it on the table next to me as I'm watching, and then put it back in after the segment's over in order for me to get any kind of engagement. It's really brainless trash TV. And again, guys, if this is your cup of tea, great, great. It's not for me. It's like all seafood, right? I despise all seafood. No, this, like, I really do. I despise every kind of seafood. No, I don't care about fried this, fried that. I don't care what you do with what we know. Oh, it doesn't taste like fish. Great. Then I'll have chicken, right? It's like seafood for me. People love seafood. I hate it, right? And so you're never going to get me to like seafood, and I'm never going to talk you out of not liking it. So it's kind of one of those deals. So we'll see. Russo's back in the mix again. But the big story here coming out of all of this is Liv Morgan, who comes out at the towards the end before Rusev did, and claims that Lana was involved with her and romantically, and that she found herself in Lana and that Lana accepted her, which kind of goes completely against all of the promos that Liv has been talking about in her, I don't know, whenever she's in like a hotel, fancy hotel, 5-star bathroom, you know, sitting in bubble baths and combing her hair and all this weird stuff about how she doesn't need anyone to feel like she's, you know, can accept herself. And maybe that's what she's alluding to, is the fact that Lana, she was looking for that validation from Lana during this relationship, whenever it actually happened. they got together at some point. I don't know when. It appears that they are no longer together. It's not as if she was cheating on Bobby with Liv, but this is kind of weird, right? And now you have Liv coming back, looking like the stereotypical blonde from WWE. She's a very good looking woman, right? That's not the problem. The problem is she looks like a lot of other women. She's not very distinctive, And that's weird to say about such a good-looking woman, but she's not distinctive in a way that you would look at her if you were passing her on the street. And other than go, ooh, she's attractive, you would go, oh, I know her. She's from WWE. She's that awesome woman's wrestler. She just has a very generic look. And that's weird to say, again, for such a good-looking woman, but that's how I feel about Liv. And there's just been so many blonde women in WWE over the years that kind of look like her. It's almost as if she's just a mix of every woman that had long blonde hair in WWE over the last 5 years. I don't know if that's not a compliment, nor is it a slight on Liv. It's just that's how I felt when she came out. I actually had to do a double take. I had to look at her and go, wait, is that Liv Morgan? Right? Because we just saw a vignette from her earlier in the night. Is that Liv? And it was, obviously. And so we'll have to see where this goes. I'm a part of me just hates the other part of me for even being mildly interested in this. We all have guilty pleasures, and part of me feels shame for even enjoying this mildly at times. So anyway, we will see where this goes. This clearly is a long-term story. This is a long-arcing story, and fine. Let's go with it. Let's see what happens. I'm not going to turn away. I will still watch it, maybe at times guiltfully watch it. But that's where we're at. And again, that's how Raw ended, on a very long-winded wedding segment. So, all right, well, let's move on from this silliness that was. And again, this really hurt Raw, and I tweeted this out, and I'm still backing it, that all of the good things that happened on Raw, which there was a lot, this really negated a lot of that feeling that I had. I said, oh my, this is, you know, up until that point, I said, this is one of the best Raws I've seen in a while, and then kaboom, we get this, at least for me, the nonsensical pro-wrestling drama that just is eye-rolling and embarrassing. Imagine sitting there with a friend who you're trying to get into wrestling, and they're like, nah, it's stupid, it's fake, all the dumb drama. And then this segment comes on, and you go, oh, right. And they go, yep, see, this is why I don't watch this crap. That is what I'm imagining. Instead of going, hey, this, look at this action, right? Like, look at these athletes kicking ass. Instead, it's Lana overacting, the officiant overacting. Anyway, let's move on to something awesome. And what is that awesome thing? That awesome thing would be Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens, now the lead babyfaces of Monday Night Raw, as Seth and the AOP continue to run roughshod over the program. So what happened was, at the beginning of the show, Kevin Owens came out. The crowd really got a nice pop for Owens here, and comes out and blames the attack. Owens blames the attack for Rey losing his United States Championship to Andrade, as he shows Seth joining forces with the AOP, and the reason that Rey lost at Madison Square Garden was because of the attack on Rey by the AOP. Well, here's the kicker. While I understand the logic, when you go back and watch the small part of the ending of that match with Rey Mysterio and Andrade, Rey Mysterio hit the 619. And then as Rey was coming off the top to do his splash for the pin, Andrade just put his feet up and then hit his double arm DDT, his hammerlock DDT. So it had not, I mean, that to me is not a sign that it was, you know, the AOP attack being responsible for the loss for Rey, because there wasn't him stumbling around or you know, he was struggling to get up or he just kind of fainted in the ring or, you know, nothing like that. It was just a straight, well, you lost because you got hit in the face from Andrade. He caught you coming off the top rope and then just hit his finish on you. So it's just a normal match. Again, there was no evidence in the video of Rey stumbling again or losing consciousness. And what I'm thinking back to is back in 98, when The Undertaker and Austin had a program, Undertaker hit Stone Cold in the face with a shovel on Monday Night Raw. And then WWE subsequently showed a house show a couple of days later of Austin blacking out after a match. And that was awesome because that really that was significant to me at the time because I was still, I mean, I was 100% emotionally invested anyway and still a little bit unsure if it was real or not. But them showing that, that's how you sell something that happened on a show carrying over to a non-televised show and adding investment, adding value to that angle that happened on Raw carrying over to a house show. You never see that. That makes sense in that case with Austin and the shovel. In this case, Ray just simply lost the match. There was no stumbling. There was no passing out, blacking out. It was just, he lost. So I know, I appreciate what they're trying to do of trying to pin his loss on AOP, but Rey Mysterio just straight up lost. So anyway, moving on from this this opening segment here, Owens calls out Rollins, and Rollins comes out with the AOP right away. Rollins says he's the savior of WWE and the Messiah. I love that. By the way, that was just a nice, nice touch, calling himself the Messiah. Oh, man. Rollins is on his effing game. Rollins is the most interesting he's been in, like, a year. I love what Seth Rollins has done here, and calling himself the Messiah, the self-appointed dictator leader. It's all wonderful. You guys know I'm a huge fan of this angle. He's going to make things better, and Owens charges them and starts beating down Owens. Before this, Owens said that he knows he's going to continue to get beat down, but he said one of these times he's going to take one of them down with him. Samoa Joe comes out to even the odds and clears the ring. Joe puts Seth in the Coquina clutch, but Rezar breaks it up. Owens gets in the back gets back in the fight, and the two sides brawl until security comes out to pull them apart. Owens ends up hitting a Swanton bomb off the top turnbuckle onto the AOP and the entire security team. So a hot way to open Raw. I loved that segment. It established Joe firmly as a babyface, and it finally gives Kevin Owens some backup for this 3-on-1 consistent weekly attack. Makes sense. Joe and Kevin Owens have joined forces, and I'm loving it. They're shown back talking in a locker room after the break, and they're informed that security is on their way after what just happened, and then a bunch of guys in black shirts walk in. Joe tells them to stay out of his way, and then Joe and Owens leave together. And they also acknowledge that, you know, they've done bad things in the past, but they have a common enemy. All makes sense. And Joe has really worn out his heel run, although I still think he could be a great monster heel, just as I think that Drew McIntyre has a monster heel title run in him, but neither one has come to fruition. But I will take this babyface version of Samoa Joe with Kevin Owens. I just don't want Kevin Owens, or rather, I don't want Samoa Joe to change his character in any kind of way. And what I mean by that is Samoa Joe, what I think makes him great is his cadence and believability as a character. And I don't want him to start, you know, doing sing-alongs with the crowd and coming up with cute things and asking the WWE Universe, God, I hate that term, you know, what they think, or you're trying to engage them. You just continue to be you, and the fans will cheer for you organically. I'm not a fan when a heel turns face and all of a sudden the WWE fans, as they should properly be called, suddenly they're the most important thing, and it's a we thing, like Seth Rollins did last year, which I despised. It's a we thing. I did this for you. We overcame. We. Stop it. Just stop. I don't need the we crap, and I hope Joe doesn't go down that road, and he just continues to be Samoa Joe. That's all I need. He's got justification. I love it, and this storyline continues to just kick ass. There's no other way to put it. All right, then we get an awesome, another awesome segment, Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy. These two are just peanut butter and jelly. We all know this. They stole the show at TLC, which I said and many others said way before WWE announcers decided to say it, that they stole the show at TLC, and they did. And now they, I think, arguably stole the show on Monday Night Raw. I mean, these two just have a chemistry together that is not common, and with Aleister Black winning clean here, I would winning clean and decisively with two of his black masses, this to me signifies that Aleister Black is moving on. I think he's moving on, and again, I don't know where or who or whom he's moving on to, but this was a sign to me that with such a decisive victory, there's no more room for discussion of who's the better man after this is the second time Aleister Black's beaten him clean. There's just no justification for another match. As great as these two are, and the rumors I've been hearing that this program is going to continue longer, how? Right? How? I mean, I don't know how this can. I would say that it's just time for them to move on, and that's fine. But at some point, I wouldn't mind seeing these two lock horns again. It's just, they're a pleasure to watch. They're physical as hell. My God, some of the kicks to the head, I don't know how they fake. And it's a thing of beauty when two guys like this come together that have such great chemistry. It's a damn thing of beauty. And again, I hope these two are opponents at some point in the near future. Seth and AOP are backstage, and AOP insists that nobody's kicking them out tonight. But Rollins says, he can't believe management asked their messiah to leave. Interesting who management is, right? It's just this faceless, nameless group of suits that are management, as we don't have a general manager anymore. And that's fine. I'm okay with there not being a general manager. We've seen it played out for way too long, and it was just a position that was overutilized way too much, and it became more about, sometimes, in some cases, became more about the general manager, the crooked general manager or authority, my God, the authority, than it did about the performers in the ring. And that was a distraction, and it's not the way it should be. So I'm okay with this faceless, nameless group of management suits that are making these decisions. Oh, fine. I'm totally okay with the anonymous part of this. Okay. But ultimately, Seth and AOP leave. Rowan approaches Lana backstage and asks why he isn't invited to her wedding. Rowan talks to his covered cage in his hand and says, "We don't care anyway," and then screams and walks away, and Lana looks confused. So we still don't know what's in his cage, but my, how the mighty have fallen from being the assailant of trying to kill Roman Reigns, that's not an understatement, over the summer, and suddenly getting into just a forgotten position on Raw, just carrying around this cage, of which I don't think WWE even knows where they're going with that, to be honest with you. All right, but then we did get Eric Rowan versus Kip Stevens, and guess who wins? Yeah, Eric Rowan continues to just mow through these nameless, I shouldn't say nameless because I just gave you his name, but these enhancement talent, and fine. I mean, if you're trying to rebuild Rowan, nothing wrong with squash matches. Nothing wrong with it at all. He won with the Iron Claw. So, all right. Charlotte then comes out of the ring and gets on the mic and says she's here to announce her entry into the Women's Royal Rumble match. And Charlotte runs down a list of her accolades and that she's arguably the greatest of all time. By the way, so again, we're going to get into this more and more as Rumble season rolls on and gets closer to the show itself. How can you just declare yourself in the Rumble? You just declare it? And my God, if there is a man or a woman in the Men's Royal Rumble match this year, I may end up, first of all, the show will be labeled explicit right off the bat, but I may blow a gasket. I mean, unless God Almighty, let's not even get into this, but if you have a woman coming into the Men's Royal Rumble and then saying, "Well, I identified as a man, so that makes me a man because I say I am." I'm not even going to get into the politics of the whole men can be women and women can be men thing. But I think you can read through what I believe. And having a woman coming into the Royal Rumble match for the men's match and saying, "Well, I identified as a man and now I'm going to compete as a man." Don't even get me started on that. But feel what I'm saying. Feel the tone, because I don't want to get into politics. But I can see that happening at some point. Good Lord, look out. Look out if that happens. Anyway, but apparently you can just declare yourself in the match. There's no qualifications other than just saying I'm in the match. So wouldn't that beg the question of, well, shouldn't everyone just be like, "Oh, I'm in. So first person, it's like first come, first serve. There's no qualifications. There's no tournament. There's no any kind of standard to get in. You just say you're in and you're in. And the most, and what's on the stake here is the main event of WrestleMania? Whatever. I just think too much, I think. So Charlotte says she's sure everyone is tired of hearing her talk about being the queen of WWE, so she's just going to show everyone why. And it's interesting, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due to this major podcast that I listen to, and I do. We know who it is. I heard on the show, and I do not like to just basically mirror opinions, because then I feel like I don't have my own original thoughts. I don't want to be just a parrot repeating what I hear. So I'm going to go I will repeat it if I agree with the statement. If I like actually do, but I'm not going to just repeat it because it's a popular opinion on this large platform, that Charlotte doesn't feel like she has a direction. We don't know how to feel about Charlotte, right? I'd agree with that. Charlotte's been kind of floating out there, but with the same I'm a queen, bow down to me gimmick. And it's true. I don't know how to feel about Charlotte. She hasn't had any real direction in quite a while. I'm very confused about her character, where she lands. She is always kind of cutting the same promo. It's not very babyface-ish to call yourself the queen. I don't know. I mean, there are so many silly nicknames out there of queens and princesses and the golden queen. Didn't Mandy Rose call herself, isn't she like the golden queen or the golden princess or something? I saw it on her on one of the graphics when she was coming in for her match, and I think it was SmackDown last week. I don't know, but there's queens and princesses and empresses and all this silly. When you think about the cartoonish part of this, and I know it's marketing, but nah, I don't know. I guess I'm just being cynical now. But anyway, Charlotte's character. Does anyone else feel that way? Do you guys feel that she just has been kind of floating out there in the middle? And there's been no clear cut. She's heel, she's face. And don't give me all shades of gray are good. Why does it always have to be defined? Well, it has to be defined in my eyes because she's a huge part of the women's division. She's not just an up-and-comer and letting, WWE's not letting the fans decide which way she goes, I don't think. She's a major player. Major player on Raw. And there's just no direction for her right now. But maybe this was a sign of things to come, because Natalya comes out and answers the open challenge. And it was Natalya putting up a good fight. But ultimately, Charlotte goes for a moonsault. Natalya blocks it. Charlotte lands on her feet. They scramble for position on the mat until Charlotte catches Natalya in the figure eight. And Natalya taps. So Natalya, the ever-loving gatekeeper of WWE, who is just the good soldier, who is never going to be quite at the top of the division, but is used as a pawn, and I mean that respectfully, but it's, not everyone can be at the top, and that's okay. But she's being used as a pawn in a very important piece of the puzzle here to advance other talent. And you have to have that. I understand that. You may be saying that I am disrespecting Natalya. I'm not. She's one of the most respected women in the locker room. She's never going to be at the top of the division. She's just not. It's just not going to happen. But without her existing in the position she does, other talent couldn't get over. So I'm fine with this. Charlotte wins clean. But again, the big story here is not just Charlotte winning. It's what is Charlotte? I don't know what to feel for her. I just don't. Anyway, Becky Lynch is backstage. She cuts a promo against Asuka for the women's title at the Royal Rumble. Becky says that she's putting it all on the line and won't sign her new contract until after the deals. She deals with Asuka. I'm fine with this. I like her logic that the WWE machine is afraid of her facing Asuka because of the investment that they have made in Becky over the last 8 months of her being champion, that really almost 9 months, that it could all go and be for naught if Asuka beats her clean, because Asuka has beaten her clean in the past. As we remember, prior to WrestleMania last year, Asuka beat her clean, which made zero sense, but it's good for the storyline now. So I'm fine with it. I have nothing to really say about it. Lashley's shown backstage, getting ready for his wedding with Lana. He's wearing a sleeveless tuxedo and putting on his makeup, presumably, because it got all over Lana's face. Then we see a new promo package for promoting the new Liv Morgan. She's got blonde hair, as we said. She said the old her was too impulsive, and she tells everyone to get ready for the new her. Little did we know we'd get the new her later that night. AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson come out to the ring and talk about beating the Viking Raiders time and time again. And now it's their time for a tag team title shot. The Street Profits come out to interrupt, and the Profits, they talk about beating the OC before, and they think they should have a title shot. Obviously and predictably, this turns into a match, and the Street Profits win. After Ford tags in, hits a frog splash off the top for the three count. Nothing to write home about here. It's really about, I think, building the Street Profits from just being backstage obnoxious a-holes, which was what they were, into a legitimate entertaining tag team. And that's what I want to see. I don't want to see them backstage talking to each other, but not facing each other when they talk to each other, because that's what everyone does backstage, apparently. That's just how you talk to people backstage. You just look parallel at each other and kind of maybe side-eye so that the camera can get a good view of your conversation. It's stupid. But they're not doing that anymore. They seem to be out in the ring doing what they were meant to be doing, and that's being an excellent tag team. So back from the break, we see the Street Profits backstage celebrating. They briefly talk about Lana and Lashley's wedding. And they then tell the OC and the Viking Raiders that we want the smoke. What the F does that mean? What does that mean? You want a cigar? You want a cigarette? What the hell is that supposed to mean? Ugh. All right. Drew McIntyre beats Ryder and Hawkins after he hits a Claymore and stacks them on top of each other. So Drew McIntyre is kind of in the boat that Eric Rowan's in with these enhancement talent matches. Fine. That's fine. Drew McIntyre, I'd rather have him squashing people than being 50-50 booked with higher level talent, because this building a new foundation for Drew, who I think deserves way better. But they're in a holding pattern, but they're in a productive holding pattern with Drew and with Eric Rowan. All right. Jerry Lawler then informs us that Rey Mysterio will have a rematch against the United States champion Andrade next week on Raw. I have no problem with this. But if WWE has told me months ago that, you know, automatic rematches are passé and they are antiquated, how did Rey Mysterio earn this, right? How did Rey Mysterio earn this rematch if that is no longer a birthright of champions that lose their belts? They get an automatic rematch. I don't know. Somebody tell me. This is what I'm talking about. There's no consistency. But anyway, moving on before I get on a rant. Here's something I really loved. Because we're gonna get positive here. Randy Orton comes out to the ring on crutches. He has someone help him in the ring and talks about the risks of getting in the ring and how injuries, you know, happen. And talked about Edge, how he had to give up everything because of an injury. And he says that after his knee was looked at in a house show in Hershey, Pennsylvania, in a match that he had, which I thought was real. They really went all in here. He now knows he won't be able to come back for a long time, and he might never be able to come back. AJ comes out and taunts him, and taunts him to give him an RKO, puts his arms behind his back, and then kicks a crutch out from him. And then, let's see, what I'm reading the review here. Orton says AJ is more patient than he is, and he gives AJ an RKO out of nowhere, and Orton was faking the injury. I loved it. I know people are saying, the argument is, well, he went through all this just to hit an RKO on AJ Styles when he could have just interfered in a match and come out of the, you know, through the crowd and hit an RKO. But here's the thing. We've seen that from Randy. We've seen that from Randy before. I have no issue with this. And they fooled me. And that's fine. I'm fine with that. I like being fooled by WWE every once in a while because it doesn't happen. And it's also a more creative way to get to an RKO. And it shows the babyface outsmarted the heel. Okay, it's not just a sneak attack. you know, AJ deserved it. He did it man-to-man instead of striking from behind as heels do. It's creative. And WWE went to great lengths to even fool fans, right? During the match in Hershey, Pennsylvania, they put up the X sign, which is the universal sign. We all know there's a true injury. And he was helped to the back, and he was helped back to the ring. I mean, it was just well done. I loved it. And yes, it's a really intricate plan just to hit an RKO when he could have done it another way. But why would you want it another way that we've already seen? This is a very, I think, more creative way to get it done. And it also builds heat on AJ to get his heat back. And it creates more tension between the two because now, you know, I'm going to want to tune in next week to see how pissed AJ is at Randy. I love seeing how angry AJ gets at Randy. When he was so angry a few weeks ago, all he could muster out was Randy Orton. He was so angry. That's all he could say. I'm enjoying this. I love this angle. And I'm glad that it's not a true injury. That would have been a big blow. All right, Andrade versus an enhancement talent. This actually ended in a no contest as Ricochet came out to stop the attack on this local talent. Andrade was going to give this local talent a DDT on the concrete, which, by the way, guys, it wasn't actually concrete. It was just another layer of padding. But nonetheless, I don't want to pull the curtain back too much. They kept saying concrete, concrete. It really wasn't, but hey. Anyway, Andrade versus Ricochet. Look, Ricochet is just brilliant in the ring. I mean, he just always is. And Andrade is as well. Which, by the way, Andrade and Charlotte got engaged. So congrats to the couple there. But this match was really good. I had no issues with this whatsoever. Ricochet hits an inverted DDT and then goes to the top turnbuckle. Zelina shoves Ricochet off the top turnbuckle and the ref didn't see it. Andrade followed up with a hammerlock DDT for the three count. Fine. I want Andrade to build some, as my God, I'm going to say the corporate buzzword, momentum. But he does. Andrade needs to build a little bit of it. As new United States champion, I believe he will retain next week. I think they are really going to try to see what they have with Andrade and give him a bit of a push, see how the crowd reacts. I'm glad they didn't split up him and Zelina and they just teased it. And they didn't actually go through with it. I'm glad this is a great pairing. Zelina adds so much to Andrade's character. It's immeasurable. And having him now hold the belt, she can be the one and the reason why he keeps the belt with interference and doing things behind the referee's back. It's a tried and true formula, folks. And I have no problem with it. And Zelina is also brilliant as well. Even on the mic, she's just comes off as such a fiery, you know what, and I love it. All right, let's see. Then we got to the wedding, and y'all know what I think about the wedding. It was just, from all the good things that happened on Raw, of which I loved most of it, it just, you know, it's like eating an amazing dinner, right? You have your favorite meal, you're loving everything about it, and then you get to the dessert, and it's like, I don't know, you get like sour lemons or something. That's how it felt like for me. But for some of you, it was like, hey, bring it on. And that's great. That's great. You know, if you love this stuff, that's awesome. It's just not what I like. It's just not for me. My taste of wrestling is a sprinkle of that, but not ending Raw on that and opening Raw on that and weaving that throughout the show. But boy, oh boy, you talk about Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon loving this because it gets away from their identity as a pro wrestling company, of which they are. Boy, there's nothing better than this kind of stuff to say, we're drama TV. Okay, well, there was a lot of Jerry chants, and I loved it, because that's exactly what this was. Trash TV. It was trash TV, poorly acted, in my opinion. It just was. But will I watch it? Yes, and I hate myself for it. So, and ultimately, as I said, that's all WWE gives a damn about, is that I add to the viewership numbers. So, yeah. Shame on me, and as WWE would probably say, well, we don't care. You're watching. That's all we care about. Whatever. I'm the fool here. All right. Guys, well, I hope you enjoyed the Raw review. Overall, I loved Raw, other than the final segment. And, you know, I hope you guys are excited about the Rumble, as it's only 3 weeks away. Again, four more shows coming this week. Or three more shows coming, I'm sorry. Four more are coming with AEW NXT, our week in review, and tomorrow, which is also going to be the Wrestling Nostalgia Decade in Review special. Really, really looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a blast because it's going to be awesome to look back at the last 10 years and go, oh my God, that's right, and this and this and this, as I break down the major segments and the major items and news stories year by year. I'm really looking forward to the show tomorrow night, and that'll be dropping on tomorrow night as well. So just keep refreshing your feed. I mean, every time you refresh your feed, there may be a new show. So keep checking that. And again, guys, thank you for listening. Head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast if you want all of these shows ad-free, and you want to get on the show and have your own podcast with me and have a discussion. You're more than welcome to check that out at patreon.com/WWE podcast. And I am also going to try to get video up and running in about a week or so for patrons of the show. And again, maybe even for the website and for my free feed on Apple Podcasts, Google, and all that, Spotify, iHeartRadio. So maybe there'll be a little bit of video there and a lot more video on the actual Patreon feed, because I have some things coming, some supplies in the mail that will make the viewing experience a little bit more professional, right? With my logo in the back, all that kind of stuff. I don't want to make it look like I'm sitting in my mom's basement. It's just obviously not professional. So, all right. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. And you'll be hearing a lot more of me this week, whether you love it or hate it. It's going to happen, along with my awesome hosts and co-hosts. So, all right, guys. Well, again, Happy New Year. Thank you for listening. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.